Chapter 5. Near Ma'arib, Yemen.
Down there, mister, is tomb of queen.
The wizened Bedouin jabbed the air, his bony finger pointing to a fissure about a yard wide and 2 feet high in the side of the pockmarked limestone hill. The rough-edged layers of strata above and below the opening were like lips afflicted with a bad case of trench mouth. Anthony Saxon got down on his hands and knees and peered into the hole. He pushed aside thoughts of poisonous snakes and spiders, unwound his turban, and pulled off his beige desert robe to reveal long pants and a shirt. He flicked on a flashlight, probed the darkness with its beam, and took a deep breath. "Down the rabbit hole I go," he said with a carefree jauntiness. Saxon dove into the opening, wriggling his lanky 6-foot frame like a salamander, and disappeared from sight. The passageway sloped downward like a coal chute. Saxon experienced a claustrophobic moment of panic when the chute narrowed and he pictured himself stuck, but he shimmied his way through the tight squeeze with the use of creative finger-toe coordination. To his relief, the passageway widened again. After crawling for about 20 feet, he popped out of the chute into the open. Mindful not to bump his head on a low ceiling, he slowly stood erect and explored his surroundings with the flashlight. There was plenty of headroom. The bullseye of light fell on the mortared stone block wall of a rectangular space about as big as a 2-car garage. There was an opening with a corbelled arch about 5 feet high on the opposite wall. He ducked through the breach and followed a passageway for around 50 feet until he came to a rectangular room about half the square footage of the first. The dust that covered every surface started him on a coughing fit. When he recovered, he saw that the room was bare except for a wooden sarcophagus that was tipped on its side. The lid lay a few feet away. A vaguely human form swathed in bandages from head to toe was half tumbled out of the ancient casket. Saxon cursed under his breath. He had arrived centuries too late. Grave robbers had stripped the tomb of any valuables hundreds of years before he was born. The sarcophagus lid was decorated with a painting of a young girl, probably in her late teens. She had dark, oversized eyes, a full mouth, and black hair tied back from her face. She looked vibrant and full of life. With gentle hands, he rolled the mummy back into the case. The desiccated corpse felt like a dried bag of sticks. He righted the sarcophagus and slid the lid back on. He ran the flashlight beam around the walls of the tomb and read the letters carved into the stone. The words they formed were in epigraphic Arabic of the 1st century A.D. "Off by 1,000 years. "Crap," he muttered. Saxon patted the sarcophagus cover.
"Sleep well, sweetheart. Sorry to disturb you."
With a last sad glance around the tomb, he followed the corridor back to the chute opening. He grunted his way through the tight spot and pulled his dust-covered body out of the hole into the 100-degree heat. His pants were ripped and his knees and elbows were scraped and bleeding. The Bedouin had an expectant expression on his dark face.
"Bilkis?" he said.
Anthony Saxon responded with a belly laugh.
"Bilked is more like it."
The Bedouin's face fell.
"No queen."
Saxon recalled the portrait on the sarcophagus.
"A princess, maybe. But not my queen. Not Sheba."
A car horn beeped at the bottom of the hill. A man standing next to a beat-up old Land Rover had one hand in the car and the other waving in the air. Saxon waved back, slipped into his desert robe and turban, and led the way down the slope. The man blowing the horn in the sand-blasted vehicle was an aristocratic-looking Arab whose upper lip was hidden under a luxuriant mustache.
"What's up, Mohammed?" Saxon said.
"Time to go," the Arab said. "Bad people come."
He brandished the barrel of the Kalashnikov automatic rifle toward a point about a half mile distant. An oncoming vehicle was kicking up a dust cloud.
How do you know they're bad people? Saxon asked.
They are bad people around here, the Arab said with a gold-toothed smile. Without another word, he got behind the wheel of the car and started the engine.
Saxon had learned to respect Mohammed's skill at keeping him alive in the Wild West atmosphere of Yemen's backcountry. Every chieftain in the area seemed to have his own private army of brigands and larceny and murder in his heart. He slid onto the passenger seat. The Bedouin piled into the back. Mohammed mashed the accelerator. The Land Rover kicked up dirt and sand. As the driver ground through the gears, he managed somehow to steer and hold on to his weapon as well. Mohammed kept checking his rearview mirror. After several minutes, he patted the dashboard as if it were the neck of a trusty steed.
"We're okay," he said with a wide grin. "You find your queen?"
Saxon told him about the sarcophagus and the mummy of the young girl. Mohammed jerked his thumb at the Bedouin in the back seat.
"I told you. This son of a camel and his village are all crooks."
Thinking that he was being praised, the Bedouin displayed a toothless grin. Saxon sighed and shifted his gaze to the barren countryside. The locale changed, but the scene was always the same. A native con man would tell him in excited tones that the queen he was looking for was literally beneath his nose. Saxon would make a hair-raising crawl into the middle of an ancient necropolis that the con man's forebears had looted hundreds of years before. He couldn't count the number of mummies he had encountered. He had met a lot of nice people along the way. Too bad they were all dead. Saxon dug a few rials out of his shorts pocket. He handed the coins to the delighted Bedouin and declined the man's offer to show him another dead queen. Mohammed dropped the Bedouin off at a cluster of desert tents. Then he drove to the old city of Ma'arib. Saxon was staying at the Garden of the Two Paradises Hotel. He asked Mohammed to come by the hotel the next morning, and they would decide on his plan. After a hot shower, Saxon changed into long cotton slacks and shirt and went down to the lounge, his mouth feeling as if he'd swallowed a pound of desert sand. He sat at the bar and ordered a Bombay Sapphire martini, and the drink's astringent sweetness washed the grit out of his throat. He chatted with a couple of Texas Oil Company rednecks. A second martini revived his spirits until one of the oil men asked him what he was doing in Ma'arib. Saxon could have responded that it was the last leg of a doomed quest to find the fabled Queen of Sheba among the ruins of old Ma'arib, the city that was said to be her home base. He said simply, "I'm here to test the waters." The oilmen exchanged puzzled glances and then broke into hearty laughter. Before they headed back to their quarters, they bought Saxon a third martini. Saxon was at that wonderful point where all brain activity was clouded by an alcoholic haze when an elderly bellhop shuffled into the bar and handed him a sheet of hotel stationery with a brief message scrawled on it. "I believe I can introduce you to the man of the sea. If you are still interested in meeting him, let me know soonest." He blinked the blurriness from his eyes and read it again. The sender was a Cairo antiques finder named Hassan, whom he had spoken to by phone before coming to Yemen. He scrawled an answer at the bottom of the note and handed it to the bellhop with a tip and instructions to arrange transportation for a morning departure. Then he ordered the first of several pots of strong black coffee and buckled down to the job of getting sober.